Welcome to the Educause podcast. This podcast is sponsored by Real Networks and features a session from the Educause 2008 annual conference. Participants include Kyle Dickinson, associate professor at Abilene Christian University, William Rankin, associate professor and director of mobile learning research at Abilene Christian University, and George Saltzman, executive director of the Adams Center for Teaching and Learning at Abilene Christian University. The session is entitled, A Campus-Wide Approach for Mobile Learning with iPhones.
This session is A Campus-Wide Approach for Mobile Learning with iPhones and will be presented by three gentlemen from Abilene Christian University. Be certain to fill out the evaluation forms using the kiosks at the end of the session, if you will, please. And at this time, if you've not already done so, put your phones on vibrate or silent so you won't interrupt the speakers. Abilene Christian has provided iPhones for each member of the incoming freshman class this year. And so these gentlemen are here today to tell you how they did that. We have, and what you do with it, right? We have with us George Saltzman, who is Executive Director of the Adams Center for Teaching and Learning. Kyle Dickinson, Associate Professor at Abilene Christian, Professor of 18th Century English. And William Bill Rankin, who is an Associate Professor in Medieval English, both of whom are faculty in residence for the Adams Center for Teaching and Learning. Will you please join me in welcoming these gentlemen?
Hi there. That was a great response. This is us, and it's a sort of strange group, I think, two English professors and our friend George Saltzman, who's a programmer and now an educational specialist. This is, what our wives call us these days and many of the students on campus, and it's an unfortunate thing, but there it is. Abilene is a private liberal arts school, private comprehensive university, actually, in sort of the middle of Texas. And we have about 4,800 students, about 500 grad students, and the rest are undergraduates. This is some footage from handing out iPhones or iPod Touches this year, and George is going to get into some of the details about that. But it's been a really exciting year, although it's very much at the beginning points. We've been working on this project for about 2 years, since a little bit before the iPhone was on sale, actually. In fact, since shortly after that amazing January keynote. For us, it's been great. I mean, we've gotten some really nice attention from some places. That's been lovely. You may have read entries about us. And so that's been very nice. But there's also been, you know, some other stuff that people have said. And there's certainly a suspicion about mobile learning and about what this would do. And there's certainly suspicion about these kinds of devices. Are they going to be beneficial in the classroom? Or is this just some silly distraction or some way to get students to come, but we're not going to do anything with it? Well, for us, it's certainly not what this person imagines, what that person imagines. This is very much for us about linking two things. We want to recognize that technology is actually a way for people to extend their identity. It's a way for me to move into other sorts of spaces, a way for me to recognize people that I might not otherwise meet. I mean, it's been actually great being here at Educause again this year and running into people we've been emailing with and talking with and iChatting with and seeing them face to face. But that's a fairly amazing thing that we already know all these people who are distant from us. And so what we have to, I think about very first of all, and this is sort of my part of the talk, is to consider the ways that the reasons for doing this. Not just to do it because we can, but to actually have a rationale for this. Now, this idea, the kind of suspicion that people have about technology is longstanding, and it goes back to Plato. who's kind of suspicious about techne, the root word where we get technology. It's this sort of, it's kind of common and problematic. Really we should prefer episteme, we should prefer knowledge, we should prefer the kind of true stuff, and this stuff's all a little fluffy, isn't it? And so I think what we've seen as we've talked with this is that people enter with certain amounts of suspicion. A lot of technology is actually used also because our universities tend to be inherently conservative. The university as a whole is this conservative place, this place you learn stuff that's already established. And we're trying to shake that up a bit. A lot of schools will only embrace technologies that recapitulate existing powers or existing structures. But we're imagining actually that technology is now at a point where we can begin to question and maybe undermine some of those structures for the benefit of learning and teaching. So let's think for a minute about what it means to take these technologies that we've been developing certainly over the last 30 years or so and put them in your hand to do handheld learning. And we wanted to think about the roots of handheld learning and where this really comes from. Now, there are some great benefits for handheld learning. The accessibility and portability, that you can carry this around with you whenever you want to, that we can disperse information really quickly, that we can use it whenever we want, whether we're with the class or not with the class, that there are these ways that dialogue emerges and that communities form around technologies. That's excellent stuff. But there are problems, too. Suspicions. This is something that promotes distraction and reflects a loss of control over information. This challenges traditional systems and obsolesces things and obviously can quickly overwhelm. And this is, remember, the root of mLearning, the very first mLearning device. Right? I mean, people pretend that this is brand new, that the problems we're facing are brand new, but I guarantee you, and I'm a medievalist, you can trust me, that when the book, the printed book, first appears, it shakes up the world in a way that looks very similar to what's happening today with these sorts of technologies. I mean, it transforms everything, right? This is the first mass-produced educational platform. And it's this kind of treason from within. It gives the knowledge of the university out to the great unwashed masses, and now suddenly all these people who shouldn't be able to do this stuff are doing it, and they're bringing it back to the university, and teachers lose control of their classes. I mean, people have the books already. They're not listening to me lecture the books to them. This is really a challenge for people, and it disrupts everything. The university changes, government changes, religion changes, because of the book, because of what the book does. And this idea about, the book is something we wanted to really start with as we were considering our own moves, that this isn't a brand new thing. But the book, which we now totally accept in the academy, has its problems, right? It's static, has fixed content. It's linear or hierarchical, and it creates a certain kind of authority. And it's temporal and physical. If I forget my book at home, I'm sort of sunk. So what are some ways now that we can overcome some of the problems of this first handheld learning technology? Well, as we were thinking about it, we wanted to see sort of what happens with culture. And because we think culture is a great place to look for stuff. So this is stuff actually that you've probably seen around. And this is a remarkably oversaturated projector. We worked on it before, but we couldn't fix it. An interesting thing here, and just a couple of points I'd make for you. Most of this stuff hasn't hit the university yet, but it's about to. I mean, look at the bulges there in the first two in terms of creators and critics and where those are centered. We're just really starting, I think, to see more and more. An interesting thing is that collection is not critical. Why is that? Well, part of what we recognize, of course, is, I mean, For a lot of us, we spent huge amounts of time collecting information. But search is now so easy. I don't have to collect it. I just find it every time new. Oh, I'm sorry. Well, the top one is about creators. And they're in a sort of about five-year increments. Each sort of little chunk is in five-year increments. And then critics, yeah, this was a hard, we should have put bigger labels on this, although this is the original graph. Then the second is critics, then collectors. The orange one is collectors. Yellow is joiners. Green is spectators. And black is most of us. That bottom one, right? The inactives. People who see technology and maybe use it, but we're not really interacting with it in the same way, certainly, that the 12 to 21-year-olds are, those first two brackets. For us, another invaluable resource put out by EDUCAUSE and the NMC, of course, is the Horizon Report. And the Horizon Report said, this is the 2008 Horizon Report, and as we were thinking about our move, we saw these are the six new trends that they suggest are happening. And for us, part of what we recognized here was this is all about two things. It's about social access, about doing things with other people, making things, and it's about personal access. This is about something that I make, something that I do. And it's also about mobility, right? That I can carry this stuff around with me. And those trends, those technology trends, and the ECAR study suggested a similar kind of thing, that there were some crucial technology trends. The first was mobility. Last year was the first year that laptops outsold desktop machines. The second was connectedness. PDAs are beginning to decline. Smartphones were climbing steadily. My guess is that the slope of that curve jumped dramatically. This is from 2007. It'll be interesting to see what that curve looks like as we continue. And then the third is media richness. Over the two-year period between 2005 and 2007, ownership of MP3 of media devices went from 37 to 74%. Right? Three out of four people have it. So as we were thinking about trends in education and trends in technology and trying to meet these needs, we were trying to think, is there a device that can do this, that can do mobility, that you can carry around with you all over the place, that does connectedness, that does media richness? Is there some sort of thing that does these three? I don't know if you remember this keynote. I actually didn't get to see it live. In fact, Kyle and I were both in Red River, New Mexico skiing with an ACU skiing class. And I actually watched the footage. It was about 17 below. But if I went into a dumpster that was behind the lodge and balanced my laptop on it in a particular way, I could snag a Wi-Fi signal and see what had happened. And, we had been looking at devices for 10 years, trying to think about things. We had done laptop pilot programs. We had done a lot of different things. And there were always problems with them. The laptops, the screens actually made a barrier between teacher and student that we thought was problematic. And the batteries didn't last very long. We looked at Palm devices, but they just weren't powerful enough for what we wanted to do. And when we saw this thing with the long battery life, with a full web browser, with all that kind of stuff, we said, this is something worth exploring. And so we started looking at it. I actually made some cardboard cutout models so we could see how big they really were, and right afterwards. I'm going to let my friend George Saltzman here continue the story.
Thanks, Bill. I'm going to talk just briefly about how we got started, what we're doing, where we are right now with the experiment, and then I'm going to turn it over to Kyle, and he's going to show you how we're doing things and some of the magic that's going on behind the scenes. But what Bill was saying is we had a group of people that we call the LINC team, and the LINC team is an acronym. It stands for leadership. Our provost is on that. Executive Vice President is on that. We have our deans that are a part of that group. They have infrastructure, which is our CIO and a lot of the people that work within technology. Then we have what we call networkers, which are faculty who are well connected with other faculty. We find that innovation happens through these people, and we invite them into the table. And we have what we call our knowledge group, which are the faculty that are out there that are generating new knowledge. They're our researchers. They're the ones that are always tinkering. And we want that so that everyone from the provost down to the people who are just tinkering with things, wondering what would happen if you put these two things together, would it work or would it explode? That's what the LINC team is, and it's focused around thinking about educational technologies and what we're going to do and how we should think about technologies and what sorts of things are going to influence how we do teaching and learning. You know, when we were there, and we were looking at these graphs, and we were looking at these trend numbers, and we were kind of thinking, look at MP3 ownership. 80% of college students own an MP3 player. We should be doing a lot more to put content on those MP3 players. And we were looking at how smartphones were taking off. And I remember at that point, you know, we had a little Palm Treo, and thinking, you know, this is a pretty connected device. There's a lot of things you can do that. And at the same time, we were deploying, you know, we had Wi-Fi in the classrooms, and there was lots of discussions going on. And I don't know how many of you had the discussion, is Wi-Fi appropriate in the classroom, right? Maybe we should ban Wi-Fi. Our students are being distracted. They're doing things that I don't want them to do. And, you know, maybe I shouldn't change my lecture because this internet exists. Maybe we should just pretend the internet doesn't exist and build the walls of the classroom higher and higher. And we kept saying, well, you know, we could probably do that for a while, but they're bringing their own internet with them now, and there's not going to be a wall high enough to keep this out. This is so connected with them, and what should we do about this great vast data bank that we call the internet and all this knowledge that's out there? So we started as an institution sort of exploring that, and it happened with dozens and dozens and dozens of documents. This was a hugely community-built initiative. We had faculty thinking about what this would be. We had students thinking about what this would be. And one of the major things that we did is as we put all this together, how does this fit together? So we came up with this idea to create a day in the life story. And the day in the life story was really great. It was actually transformational. It helped us start to make connections between things. And the day in the life story, eventually we turned it into a movie because we needed to be extensible, we needed to be accessible, and most of all, we needed to be visual. Before, faculty would say, I see what you're trying to do, but I just don't understand how I play a part in that. Well, all of a sudden, now they can watch this, and faculty would say, oh yeah, I could do that. And students would say, oh, I want to be a part of that. And we took this to a variety of different communities. We made proposals. We took a proposal to Apple. We took one to AT&T. We took one to our board of directors, our board of trustees. We took it to groups of faculty, and we said, what do you guys think about this? What do you think about this video? And so as I remember, we were making the presentation to the Academic Affairs Committee of the Board of Trustees, and the chair of the Academic Affairs Committee watched the video and went, wow, I want to go back to school and teach. This is what I want to do. And that was happening over and over and over. Students were saying, I want to be a part of that. This is a group of students that helped produce the video. We had a group of faculty, ones of us that are up here and some others, kind of sat around a table, and we sort of dreamed up this day in a life story. And we took that story and we sort of gave it to the community, and we said, so what does this look like? I teach a class, a user interface design class, and they took that and they started tinkering with what the user interface designs would look like. What do the students want to see in something that would enable this type of communication? We took it to faculty groups and they said, here's the kinds of things I've always wanted to do in a class. If you could just let me do these things, I'd be really happy. Through this group of students, this is the vision that helped put the video together. It's a remarkably student-produced. It was an amazing thing because they showed us exactly what they wanted. And they translated our visions into something that they wanted to see. And let me talk a little bit about our goals on the teaching and learning side. We have several paradigms that... Are you there? Collaborative, okay? We want We want learning to be collaborative. We want students working together. We want them working in groups. We want learning to be distributed. We don't want it to happen just in the classroom. We want it to happen across campus. We want it to be integrated. We want it to be connected. We want integrated to many of the things that they're doing in the curriculum, the co-curriculum, all those sorts of things. Evaluative, engaged. Absolutely want our students engaged. We thought when we can bring all those together, what we really get is connected. And that's what we called our program, was the ACU Connected Program. In order to make this happen, I'm reminded of a quote by Tony Bates, Managing Technological Change. Great book. Tony Bates says, "Presidents may dream visions and vice presidents may design plans and deans and department heads may try to implement them, but without the support of faculty members, nothing will change." I've been in education for almost 20 years and I fully agree with that assessment. We've got to have the faculty members buy into this idea. So we started in this process of faculty buy-in. We were talking about this. The video was out. We invited faculty to participate in an interest meeting. We set the meeting. We put an advertisement out. Half of our faculty showed up to the interest group. We kept having to find bigger and larger venues to make that happen. At the end of that, we offered them to be a part of a research group. 10% of our faculty applied to be researchers in an initial research group. Meant that they would get a device. No plan would be paid. You just got a device, and you would be a part of a group that would be thinking about how this would work. And we were looking at a variety of different things, looking at the social, looking at the residential, looking at the academic, looking about community. How are we going to use these things in a different part? 42 of those, we accepted 42 people in that initial research group and put them into different teams. This is actually a snapshot. The day that the iPhone, the third generation iPhone was released, we actually had faculty camping out at the AT&T store ready to get their devices. This is a group of our faculty. Woman in the white on the far left is actually the chair of the English department. Interesting. We have a math person over there in the red and journalism and communication. So things were just working remarkably well. Our faculty were receiving it well, and I guess I'm assuming, I'm making an assumption that the reason was is because they were involved with it. They were the ones writing the documents. They were the ones that were casting the vision along with us. We were putting it in motion, but largely it was their questions, their needs that we were responding to. On the 25th of February, I assumed that the announcement was sort of big fanfare, maybe a marching band would come down and the president would stand on a podium. But the university has said, we're going to do it. And we just made a press release to say we're doing it, and we let everybody know that we were doing it. And it was really exciting for about 10 minutes, and then we realized it's 6 months away, and we need to get busy. A lot of work went in those 6 months. And the entire institution, I think, came together to help make a lot of this work. Just to give you an idea, we distributed 957 devices to students, and I'll talk just briefly about that later on. 169 devices went to our faculty. We tried to break that in half, and we said we'll do one half of the faculty this year, one half of the faculty next year. The way the program is set is you get a device for 2 years, and then you get another device. So every 2 years, you're upgrading devices. Students are able to keep a device for 2 years, move on. Their contracts are set that way. It makes sense. Over time, 182 devices have been distributed to staff. We started with our support staff first, and as people figured out that they could change in their old Nokias to get an iPhone, a lot of the staff that had phones started making that change. Student distribution happened primarily over a three-day period, our move-in weekend. Almost all of that was done, I guess 80% of that was probably done on the first day. We had 12 ACU employees, according to our CIO, who worked directly with distribution. I think that's actually maybe a little bit higher. There seems like a lot that were working. We had 20 employees that were doing tech support, but they were also doing the other kinds of things that you do on move-in weekend, helping students get their computers on the network and that sort of stuff. Had shirts on. And the interesting thing is you can't just get an iPhone, take it out of the box, and work. You have to connect it to the AT&T network. And when the 3G rollout happened, you remember the first one, you could take the phone home and activate it at home, but AT&T kind of pulled that back on the 3G, and you had to do it in store. And we, our technology services coordinator, our director there, went out and took a group and started looking at what was going on in the AT&T stores and the Apple stores, and timing the processes and thinking how long and where are the problems. Well, it ended up that we brought 24 AT&T employees on campus to help with the activation. We activated over 500 devices in a single day. We think that may be a record. I'm not sure if that has ever, I mean, have you ever seen 24 AT&T employees in an AT&T store making activations? It was an amazing event. Things were going on. It went exceptionally smooth. The coordination that happened out of Technology Support Services was absolutely amazing. This is how it fell out. When you look at the choice, students could get an iPhone or an iPod Touch. If you get the iPhone, you're responsible for your own plan. If you don't want to have a plan, then you can pick up an iPod Touch. 64% of our students chose the iPhone. 36% of our students chose the iPod Touch. Okay, why is that? We'll investigate that just a little bit. Let me tell you a little bit about student expectations. How did they feel about this? We had a four-page instrument that was administered as they picked up the devices. Over 80% of the students did that instrument, so that is a really good in if you're looking at that from an analysis standpoint. Look at how positive, good, helpful. These were three questions that were asking the same question, just you know how you're supposed to do that if you've ever been to your stats class. We asked the question three different ways. Very, very few had a negative perception. Huge numbers on the positive perception that they thought that the device would be positive in their college experience. Looking at the iPhone, iPod Touch, what was influencing that decision? Were we unduly influencing iPhone because we kept saying iPhone more than we said iPod Touch, some things like that? The iPhone people thought that most people wanted them to have an iPhone more than everything. If you look at the what we believe is the single most influencing factor on why people chose an iPod Touch over an iPhone, it's really parents, and that's going to be related to, if you're really into numbers, here's your layout, but it's they've got plans. The plan's too expensive, or we're already in a contract with somebody that's not AT&T, and we don't want to get off Verizon just for you. I'm sorry, Johnny, you're going to have to get an iPod Touch. So anyway, these are the influencing factors. iPhone was perceived to be far more useful. I mean, this is really big on the scale. And then you'll see that difficult to switch prior contract is really big on a negative influencing factor. As I kind of conclude with my part, I want to talk about initial observations. Our faculty are reporting. We're still doing analysis. You've seen all the data that we have that's actually crunched. But just talking to faculty, saying this has really increased the amount of communication between my students and myself. We're communicating more. There's a variety of different tools we have that were specifically designed to increase the connection, and that's evidently happening. Ubiquity matters. This is just, we want to move this into all of our classes. We've rolled it out to the freshman class. It's very difficult to find a class that is uniquely freshman. Some have transfer students that have come in. Some have students that are sophomores or juniors or upperclassmen. Where we have classes that are completely saturated with iPhones, the faculty love them, things are moving really well. Where we have phones that are a mixed, we might have two students in a classroom that don't have a device. They can't participate in class. It kind of makes things awkward. We don't feel like we need to be doing that. Faculty are experimenting wildly. Not all faculty are experimenting, but those that are experimenting in ways that we never anticipated. We got a report back. We had no idea this was happening, but here is an education professor who is putting 300 megabyte files in a file space and having students play those back in real time in class over the network, and it was working. And we never anticipated that sort of usage, but wow, that was happening. We have very few what we would call extremely large classes. For us, 300 is an extremely large class, but we have a couple classes that are that large. When you have 300 students all trying to hit the network at the same time doing things causes problems with the Wi-Fi. We added a number of Wi-Fi ports, but we still didn't anticipate how that was going to play out in a room like this. Infrastructure matters. We really have to rely on the infrastructure to make this happen. We've got a technological infrastructure in place to make sure these things are supported, but we've also got human infrastructure to make sure that faculty and students know what's going on and they know how to use these devices. And really, we've got a long way to go. I can think of 1,000 things that I want to do tomorrow if we just had the resources to put forth doing it. And we know that there's a lot more things that faculty need. I think these devices are going to be, we're going to look back on these and say, how primitive was that first iPhone? I mean, how primitive was your first computer? But, you know, when you think about this, this is more advanced than those old roundy iMacs that came out that looked so cool back in the day. And, I mean, I can do video, and I've got more memory, and I've got more hard drive space. I actually have more processor power. And, you know, there's more screen real estate on this than those old little all-in-one iMac or all-in-one Mac classics that we used way back in the time. There's some things that we really know that we've got to do work on. Accessibility. If you are sight impaired, this feels like a piece of glass. And what are we going to do about that? How are we going to do that? We're working a lot with Apple trying to make those things happen. There's a lot to go. We hope that over time we're going to get there. We hope that faculty are going to look for new ways of doing learning, and that we're going to advance different types of pedagogies. We really see this as a way to move faculty beyond what we do, the way we did it in 1950, 1850, 1750, to what we should be doing in the information age. We live in a time that's unprecedented. I really do kind of resonate with what Bill said, that as the book transformed the way things happened in education, I think that the internet is also going to transform that, because the access to information is so free and open. Anyway, I'm going to turn this over to Dr. Kyle Dixon. He's going to give you a brief overview of some of the cool things that happened.
Thank you, George. It's pretty clear, though, we're spending a good deal of time talking about things going on at Abilene Christian University. Before the end of my part of the presentation, we're not working in a vacuum. And so many of you are already developing here, and I want to talk about the way that this extends very quickly into a community of practice. We're in 2007 dreaming, really kind of looking forward to what this device perhaps looks like as a learning platform. And that was a pretty formative time, a pretty exciting time. But by the time 2008 rolls around, some of these announcements, we realize, hey, it turns out Blackboard is not released really a mobile product yet, right? The kind of infrastructure, the kinds of tools that we need will be on us or on partners to begin to kind of explore, to develop. This is new territory. And as George says, that's both exciting and terrifying. Right, that the best of what this is capable of has yet to be kind of imagined or developed. So I want to talk about maybe a two-step process in getting us there. In the first 6 months, we wanted to focus on providing or kind of producing a learning infrastructure, kind of a central hub, and much of that was a mobile version of the kind of portal interface that already existed on campus, a single sign-on place where the types of services, the types of resources that students and faculty expected might be accessed. We've got a series of kind of walkthroughs that we've developed. These are actually on iTunes U and then on acu.edu/connected as self-running podcasts. And so if these are something you want to look at in a little more detail, you can do that later. The first of these is just trying to give you a sense of the first tab of the ACU mobile kind of portal interface. And what this kind of level of connectivity is trying to do is just putting students in touch with the people on campus. This is a communications device. And so the first is the public tab that's trying to bring them into touch with, say, faculty. So here we're walking with a student early in the semester asking, I just want to know how to get in touch with my teacher. And so the kinds of basic LDAP directory services, again, making those available, making that convenient and simple. As far as the search, I'm taking a class, it turns out, with Dr. Rankin. So thank you, Bill. And so we can kind of walk through the abilities for this device to give me one-tap access to not only where it is that Bill is hiding on campus, right? So we've got maps. This 3D map view is developed in Google SketchUp. Some of you have played with that a bit. And so I can go find him, ferret him out in Chambers, although he's got several offices, it turns out, on campus to hide in now. Or I've got the ability to kind of contact him quickly with on-campus phones, phones he's made available to us. But these kinds of information systems are really preliminary, right? They're really just getting us started. So the second of the mock-ups I want to walk you through is the stage where we wanted to look at the program, how we're going to kind of build success and confidence in the program, was building on the known. That our faculty and our students kind of bring expectations into a program like this. And so we want to work with systems they're already comfortable with, they're already familiar with. And so where possible, we wanted to integrate with those services. This is the kind of second tab. And this is a tab, if you just make your way on an iPhone, or if you don't have an iPhone, if you're using Safari either on PC or on a Mac, you can kind of simulate that experience at m.acu.edu. This middle tab is the one that you don't have access to, because most of you looking at you are not enrolled currently at ACU. And so that's where the podcasts step in, and these walkthroughs are trying to give you a sense of what students have access to. The first of these, for example, is just trying to build on Google Apps for Education. We've been a Google Apps campus since spring of 2007, when one of the first universities kind of deployed that system. And faculty were kind of familiar with and kind of expecting the ability to not only have access to webmail, their personal calendars, Google Docs, all of which they can do from this central tab. But we were also looking for ways to kind of press Google Apps through the APIs to make them do things that they're not out of the box capable of doing. And so one example of that was asking how we might do homework alerts. Okay, I mean, you've seen maybe out on the floor over the last day companies that they're providing interesting kind of SMS texting homework alert solutions, and we looked at some of those and we kind of played with them a bit. But it occurred to us that we've got a really robust calendaring system that we're not even stretching, we're not even kind of testing and challenging. And so, with the help of system admins on campus, we created an automatic calendaring option where, for every class on campus, calendars are all automatically spit out. And in fact, for every class meeting of each of those classes, events are already created. So when a faculty member walks in and wants to create a calendar for a particular class, all they're really doing is populating pre-existing events with readings, assignments, tests. The real power of this is stepping back in the dashboard, maybe, that you just saw. At the very top of that ACU mobile, the ability for us to kind of direct them to an events dashboard here in the top two lines there. So this is where, I mean, the real power of a system like this is making use of Google Apps, the Google calendaring system, to then go out, scrape the kind of the particularized data that faculty members have thrown up into particular classes and say, look, for me, for this particular student, today, this week, the next seven calendar days, this is what's on my dashboard, right? This is what's coming up for me. Okay, so that's a walkthrough that gives you a sense maybe how we put homework alerts or other information organizationally in front of students. But again, is that learning? Let me look at a third example. This is building on another known. On campus since 1992, I think we were trying to kind of put this together, AC has been experimenting with a class folders and Dropboxes system. The ability to put content in front of students, to move beyond sometimes just the distribution of content, but also to work some of the routing. So, you know, these folders in some of these early systems would have little triggers that are out there waiting on the network. I drop something in my Dropbox for all my students. It gets spit to them. They complete an assignment. They drop it in their Dropbox. It comes back to me. We can kind of do all of that fairly simply back and forth. But this summer, folks on campus upgraded to a Zythos document management system, and they wrote this web interface, this mobile interface for Zythos, providing faculty who are already familiar with this system drag and drop access to files for any class, to provide soft handouts, the kinds of kind of quick on-the-fly handouts for, again, classes that are already kind of preset. Here you've got class info, Dropboxes, and so on, as well as the routing folders for every one of my students already populated for me coming out of a banner. And so this mobile interface creates, the power of this is in really the, you know, in taking advantage of all the file formats that are already live and compatible on the iPhone. Suddenly, the Zythos web interface becomes a launcher for any kinds of in-class documents that I need, whether that's in typical Office file formats or whether that's PDFs, whether it's wanting to kind of make use of this as a mobile media kind of service. So images, audio, video, all capable of being deployed live and mobily, not tethered through syncing. Okay, that becomes pretty dynamic and pretty powerful, both in the classroom and out of the classroom. A one-stop shop for all of the kinds of documents that I need my students to have access to. And we see that being used in pretty different ways. Again, we mentioned kind of that this is the service that the education faculty member was throwing 300 and 500 megabyte files at students in. And that's, I mean, it's an interesting use of it. But again, we've got intro to art classes where they're looking at PDFs, they're looking at high-res images, but they're able to actually move into those images and make the kinds of on-the-fly interactive details that an art book can kind of appreciate, you know, approximate. So here, finally, let's look at one kind of final original development, and this is NanoTools. This is a solution on campus that some of our web developers put together for engagement, an engagement tool that would allow kind of live polling. NanoTools stands for No Advanced Notice, and so I'm going to come to a full student response system suite that's kind of on the radar for the future, but this is a very nimble, very simple system with a narrow focus. It says that I want to walk into class that, and at a moment's notice, I want to change the direction of my teaching, and without having pre-programmed anything, I want to ask my class a question. And here I've got a series of options, whether that's, let's ask a multiple choice question. So for example, I might walk into class today and just say, okay, look, here are four concepts that you were introduced to, you know, today. I've just deployed a four-question poll. It sends it out. Every single one of the students who's sitting in my class today receives that poll and just, you know, says, okay, well, this is, you know, the concept that I want us to spend more time on. This is the one I don't understand. And live, again, not like the reading quiz of the past that's useful to me next week, but live, in this instant, I have the ability to change the direction of my teaching because of results. These results, because this is a web app, are being updated directly, immediately live to the student devices as well. I don't need a projector for NanoTools or these kinds of web apps. As you can see, obviously, we've offered, you know, a variety of very basic testing capabilities. So true-false or Likert scales. So for example, if I'm walking into a class that in my freshman composition class recently, I was just asking them, so help me process this a bit. What is the value of mobile technologies? And so I think I had framed the question something like, is mobile technology a detriment, a distraction to learning? Well, if I ask that as a true-false question, then that's interesting. I find out very quickly, you know, which side of the fence they're on. But I've also got, you know, as you know, as educators, you know, Likert capabilities to try to really take the temperature of the room in ways that are more nuanced or more subtle. Finally, the last of the pieces. Say it again.
You did it backwards.
Of course I did. In the final of the results is the options kind of available to teachers was actually something that came out of the dreaming process for the video. Bill, rather early on, just said, you know, I've seen word clouds all over the web. What if we had the ability to deploy those in a live classroom scenario? It allows students, again, to kind of set the terms of the debate. So here I've just gone out, I've deployed a word cloud, but rather than me telling them what they're voting on, I'm actually asking them. And I think this, again, a couple weeks ago was me just saying, okay, just tell me, what do you think has been the most significant event in the 20th century? Okay, and you can see they're all over the map. Then I have the ability as an instructor, before I redeploy that, this is the only tool that's kind of a two-step tool, before I redeploy it to them for voting, to just say, okay, do I have any redundancies? Do I have any that have showed up two or three times? And then I send that back to them for an evaluation. And they start to come in as kind of live updates. Now, again, this is a tool. It's one of a number of things, I think, that we'll end up using in the classroom. And yet it allows me to say, let's talk about, you know, the most significant. Where did you end up? What are the things that you're all voting on? But it also, as kind of Bill and others have suggested, allows me kind of teachable opportunities to say, is this equally interesting what none of you are voting on or what's not appearing on this list? It's just a quick and easy kind of visualization for providing us kind of a launching board to conversation. Very quickly, I need to give Bill a chance to conclude for us. Next spring, in moving forward, we've also got a new emphasis, I think, in wanting to move toward learning tools. What's next? Well, the video vision, this video has kind of put us in touch with many potential partners out there in the broader kind of teaching and learning space. And there are exciting programs on campus for moving kind of toward production in the spring from, you know, university-wide programs like something that might move us into podcasting and iTunes U, two more program-specific programs that would focus on something like fitnessjournal.com. Let me emphasize two. Turning technologies that are out on the floor, and perhaps you've talked to them, they're, you know, at this conference for the first time, letting higher ed begin to see the student response system, a new kind of capability for their responseware product that in the past has been in a series of kind of fixed cards. But any of you that have thought about clickers at all are excited by the possibility of just having a computer in your pocket without fixed keys that allows us to do almost anything. And so they're releasing, that it's currently in beta, an iPhone native app in their responseware that will communicate back with the Turning Point audience response, student response software that's been out for a number of years. Kind of a proven technology leader, and we're very excited to be a part of that that beta moving into the spring semester. We feel like it's got a lot of potential that I'd like to talk about you individually. I'd like to talk to anybody who's interested after this is over. One other kind of detail that I would pass along is a group called Amantris, again, that came to us basically saying, what are the other tools that you'd love to dream? What are the other kind of pieces that you'd love to have in play? And one of the first of those was really an institution-wide flashcard system, something that was going to take advantage of the full kind of capabilities of media on the phone for quick and independent study. And so working with Amantris, we're producing a flashcard app. Flashcard apps exist on the iPhone, and yet I think this will be the first one that really has a truly robust back end for kind of allowing institutions to take care of subscribing to flashcards over a semester in dozens of different courses on a campus. Again, if you would be interested, I'd love to talk to you after this is over.
Just a couple of very last words. The university has worked under a model, I think, for about the last 100 years. That's an interesting model, and not really the origins of the university model. It's a factory model. And as long as we're building classrooms like this, I'm going to say we're not getting it. We're turning out students who are meant to function in very narrow ways. But the new technologies that we see, I think, can enable people to really begin to discover individualized learning in a new way. Now, that's going to challenge things, and it's going to make some things disappear, as our friend Marshall says, but it's also going to make some other things reappear and some things that have been lost for a long time. If you're thinking about this and nervous about this, I would point to one very strange phenomenon, one very strange moment in the history of the world. So Radiohead releases their last album for whatever you want to pay for it, which is interesting. But more interesting is the way they've released their most recent album, as GarageBand Tracks. Mix it yourself. Make whatever you want to make out of it. And that does a lot of the things we were talking about at the beginning. It lets communities begin to form. It lets individualized learning begin to form. We see this as a critical portal device for individualized learning and for the great new next steps the university is going to take. I think this really is a time when we're seeing a transformation in the academy, and we're pretty excited to be working with that. Thanks very much for coming.
We've just got time for a brief question or two, about a minute, so. The plan that the students are on. They're on their own plans. It was too difficult for us to sort of work out all the details, so if students get an iPhone, they actually take care of their own plans. So we offered the iPod Touch if they didn't want to do that. Yeah, you had a question. Do we have any specific courses specifically designed for iPhone? We don't, actually. And, you know, part of what we're wanting here is to provide a tool for people. I have this great book from 1963 that's How the Overhead Projector is Going to Transform the Universe. You know, the overhead projector did some great things. And I think that a device like this is going to do some fascinating things. And I do think that we're at a transformational time. But as a device, well, it does some great things, and there are some other things it doesn't do well. And I think we need to be careful to make sure that the applications we have really fit the situation. So we're just letting people discover and explore and see what they want to do, and we're trying to give lots of tools for that kind of exploration. I would bet things will change over time, but we're just really at the starting points of this. Go ahead. By and large, actually, the faculty are paying for their own plans. A lot of people are paying for their own plans anyway, but we're providing them with the devices. And the devices are refreshing every 2 years. So for our students and for our faculty, every 2 years you get a new device. And if students want to then leave with their device, it's theirs to leave with. If they leave early, obviously there are some, they either have to pay some, a prorated amount, or, you know, give the device back or whatever, but... Our AT&T coverage got a lot better. We were not set to get 3G for a while, but they've put up a 3G tower at the university, which is great. And so that's wonderful. We also have pervasive Wi-Fi, including in our green spaces. So students on campus really are often taking advantage of that Wi-Fi. But the cell network has actually been a great backup. If the network gets saturated, or if, I mean, that's been actually really helpful to have both of those. Yeah, in the back. Well, the question is about IRS gifting guidelines. This is the part where I say, I'm an English professor and I don't really know anything about that. But the device itself is the only thing that we're giving or providing in the same way that we would provide, you know, a computer or whatever. And I think that's parity for because we're not providing the plans. That's another reason why it's been very sketchy to work out. You know, we'd love to provide the students with plans, but we have no idea how the taxation works on that. It's very complicated stuff. So for right now, it's a bit provisional. Yep. Well,
there's nobody in here afterwards, so they just won't stay around.
All right. I think our official time is up, but if you want to come talk to us, we're glad to. I don't think there's anyone in here right after this. Thanks very much for coming.
This EDUCAUSE 2008 Annual Conference podcast is sponsored by Real Networks. Real Networks enables digital delivery of distance learning coursework, athletic events, and more to students anywhere. Information at realnetworks.com.